High school action to the birds and the pros with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion. WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Like we never left. It's the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddard, your sports director.
There you are.
And we're back in our normal... Thanks, Jeff. We're back with our normal group. The one you hear giggling over there is Joey Dwyer, the assistant production... Or the production director here. I'm all over the place right now. Production director here at WZND. Let's try this again here. Production director here at WZND, the voice of the Quad City Storm, and the president of the Acapellas, coming off a great concert on Saturday.
Thank you. I appreciate the support. The pipes were feeling really good that night. Didn't feel quite as good afterwards, yeah. So we're still in a little rehab, but the voices sounded better today.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it, but the next night I actually had my own acapella concert because people above me, they were singing a lot of acapella, and you know, I had my own personal one, so it was
Joe
perfect.
Joe lives right below a couple of my friends who are in one of the girls' acapella groups. Yeah. It's a cool little coincidence.
Yeah, it was nice.
And the voice you just heard is our producer, Joe Kennedy. And guys, we have a loaded show tonight. Mary Crompton from the Illinois State women's basketball team will join us in just a few minutes after the break. We're going to start things off talking about some Red Bird athletics. Blake Bogart is going to join the show. He's going to talk about some interesting stuff going on in the NBA, something mm-hmm. you probably weren't aware of. Then we're going to round things out with the pick six. So, guys, let's get into it here. It was a pretty big weekend for Illinois State football. They pulled off something maybe a lot of us were not expecting. They upset the number 13 ranked University of Northern Iowa Panthers in overtime. Yeah. It was... Coming off a big loss to Western Illinois, this certainly wasn't expected, but yeah. It was a good day to be a Redbird football fan.
Yeah, and I haven't attended a game. I've been watching them. I did call the game on Saturday, but I've watched the games just online on ESPN Plus and such. But being at the game, before the game, you could just tell there's like this like mojo they had before the game. They just seemed like locked in, walking around the field and everything. And I don't know if they've been doing that this year mostly, but like they just seemed like they were ready for this game, and they did bring the energy, especially on the defense. I mean, Zeke Vandenberg, he had kind of a down year so far this season, but that UNI game he just had, oh my goodness, that was the best performance I've seen from a defensive player maybe in all my time here at Illinois State.
I mean, Vandenberg elevated his play in that overtime. He was a very noticeable player. He was all over the field.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And the thing that I think sticks out the most to me was because the Redbirds got out, they struck first, they struck hard and got off to a big lead there, but eventually the Panthers clawed their way back in. And I think what we've seen in the past this season with the Redbirds is when they get up to leads and then the other team comes back, they kind of fold. They let that other team take advantage. The Southern game was a great example of that. But they were able to hold on, not get too rattled by it, and persevere, make it to overtime where eventually they were able to get the win. That's growth. That's what we were waiting for from this team, and it was so good to finally see that.
Yeah, the Western game, Southern game, two leads they had, and you just think about like how close they are. It's a young team at the same time, but it's also a team that has a lot of players from last year. And just to see they were able to finally hang on to this lead and take down a top team, it's a great feeling as a fan, and even better feeling, I'm sure, for the players finally pulling out that victory.
Yeah, and the defense, like you said, Leo, was absolutely incredible. Well, the UNI came into this game, obviously they're one of the better teams in the FCS, and the defense just completely put up a stop to them. Theo Day, the Panthers quarterback, 15-30 for the afternoon, but the biggest part was six sacks that Day took over the course of the game. So the defense was putting on that pressure, and even though they gave up, I think like 360 yards total offense, they were able to stop them when it mattered. They
in some red zone,
exactly. Yeah. They were super stout in the red zone, and so this ISU team, well, maybe it's a little late to make make a playoff push. They've got a lot to build on.
And you're talking about those sacks. They had six sacks. Coming into the game, they had single-digit sacks. I couldn't remember the exact number, but it was below 10. And it was a point of emphasis in the pregame show. We were talking about they need to just get to the quarterback, and they did. Zeke Vandenberg was getting there. Shannon Reed was getting there. And their defensive line was bringing in the pressure against a UNI offensive line that's very talented. They have Trevor Penning and his brother, I forget his first name, on the left side. But Penning's an NFL prospect, and he did not look like an NFL prospect. He was getting some bad penalties, some unsportsmanlike conducts with ISU, going at some cornerbacks. But it was just a great job from the Redbird defense. But I have to shout out JT Bulkin having 12 punts for over 500 yards and a major, major fake punt that turned out to get the Redbirds a field goal to end the half to have a 10-0 lead. So that was a really big thing. I mean, JT Bulkin had the longest play before the overtime touchdown on the day at a 21-yard rush on fourth down.
And talking about ISU offensively, we have every time we've talked about the Redbirds football this season, it really seems like we're talking about the quarterback situation. Who's going to be the guy? Jackson Waring, while he didn't have the most flashy stat line, actually, it was kind of a bad stat line, 9-22 for 87,
great, but, yeah.
He was still able to lead this team to a win the same way we used to see Brady Davis do when maybe he wasn't the number one guy in the offense, but he was still able to get them to a win.
And
so is Jackson
smart.
Waring going to be that guy moving forward now?
And Waring, you look at it, Waring made the throws when they mattered, though. That touchdown pass he had to Nagel, that was just a really good throw to the sideline.
Perfect.
That's
ball.
A throw that maybe Jefferson doesn't make, that Waring, though, showed he was able to make it when the team needed it the most. And so that's the type of stuff that is good to build off of. If he could keep stringing plays like that together, he could be something, a piece of the future for this Redbird team.
And as a young quarterback, you see a lot of these guys, no matter if you're in high school or NFL or college, that a younger quarterback with not a lot of experience in that league, they make some throws that maybe you shouldn't be throwing. And Jackson Waring, before in the season, he was making some challenging throws that he shouldn't be making. But when he was scrambling outside the pocket, the UNI defense was getting to him, but he was just being smart. He knew when to throw the ball away, and he knew where to put the ball. He was making sure he was not having these bad turnovers or interceptions. ISU did a good job, and it was a tough day on the run game, too, because they really couldn't get much going with Cole Mueller. They're almost making ISU, putting like eight guys in the box, just making sure, like, all right, you got to beat us through the throwing game. And then they finally did an overtime, and they stacked the box. And then Warren's like, all right, I'm just going to throw it up to my boy Nagel.
And like for a young team to be able to read that and adjust to it is something that's super promising, because this is not an ISU team we're accustomed to. Under Brock Speck, Brock Speck usually has a really nice pipeline of guys who he can kind of fill in year to year. And so you never really have these down years for ISU, at least under Coach Speck. But this year it's a little bit different because of all the guys that left the program, and some of these younger guys who weren't quite ready to step up have had to fill these holes. But you kind of see them week to week learning on the fly and getting this experience and getting this knowledge. And it's really a nice sign moving into next season of some of the things we could see.
And I think the biggest takeaway we could take from this is looking at how the Redbirds played against good teams. Because you look, they upset South Dakota 2 weeks ago at South Dakota, a very tough place to go in and play. They just upset a ranked Northern Iowa team. And even at homecoming weekend, when they had North Dakota State come into Hancock Stadium, they were in that game basically until the end.
I mean,
so they were able to hang with some very good teams. They had a lead at halftime against Southern. They bring their A game against the top teams. That loss to Western is going to stink because that was a bad loss, you should not have had. But they really haven't been outplayed by their competition, and that's the thing I'm most encouraged about. I think that's the sign of a well-coached team, a well-disciplined program, is there maybe even in games where they're overmatched, they're still able to hang in there.
And this week, to kind of wrap things up, this week they have North Dakota. Only the second time they played. They didn't get to play last year because got canceled everything. But these are two very similar teams. Both are 4-5 coming into this one, and both teams have had these games where the Hawks of Dakota, they've lost by 6, lost by 7, lost by 3, lost by 4 points, and all those came against top 25 teams in the FCS. So it's very similar compared to ISU season, so it's going to be an interesting matchup to see how those teams face.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, you have North Dakota this weekend and Indiana State next weekend. There's a chance they could end their season on a 3-game win streak, which could just be the absolute best way to end the year and build momentum for the off-season grind and then get the new signees in and stuff and just build your program
hopefully,
off of that.
Yeah, hopefully. Get like a transfer quarterback to come in, because I feel like that's the one piece that they're missing still.
And we'll see how that all plays out. But now let's move into another team that is trying to start their season on the right foot. The ISU men's basketball team, they began play on Tuesday night. They took down UNCW, and it was a game that was a little close, that they were maybe outplayed at the beginning, but they were able to hang on and get the win 68-63 over the Seahawks. And this is a bit of a new look Redbird basketball team. So I don't know how much of this game you guys were able to take in, but we could start with Joey.
Yeah, I think
they're both pointing at each other.
I think that you were very nice when you said this is a new look Redbirds basketball team. This is a Redbirds. This is a Redbirds basketball team with literally no expectations, right?
Yeah, which is a good thing for the players. I think.
But they come in. The preseason poll has them in last by a lot.
Yeah.
And so
like a lot.
Like a lot. Yeah. And so when you see them come out and get this win against maybe a team in UNCW who's
It's a fair program though.
It's not the greatest program, but they're not a slouch. But you see some of these guys who are able to step up, and oh my goodness, Antonio Reeves.
He got robbed.
We knew yeah. he was the guy on this team, but he just, he looked like he was a man on a mission. He looked like he was the guy who he knows he needs to step up.
Like at the end of the game, he missed that one free throw. I was like, dang, that would have been 30 points right there. But I mean, it's just my main takeaway from this, they were down 15 points, and this team had the heart. Like this is last year. This Redbird team doesn't make a comeback. This team kind of goes away at the end of the first half even. But that end of the first half, ISU went on an AO scoring run to wrap things up and get things closer to the lead. And that was a great momentum shift. And once the second half came out, Antonio Reeves was doing his thing, and some of the new guys were doing their thing too. I mean, Cy Chapman had a solid game, posting up 9 points and 10 total rebounds. So almost a double-double in his first game for that. It was a fun one for sure.
And one of the other things about this team, the reason why there weren't any expectations is because so many of these guys are new.
Yeah.
We have never seen this team play. Like, if you look at the starting five, Antonio Reeves, Mark Freeman, Josiah Strong, Cy Chapman, and Kendall Lewis, two of those guys were on the team last year. And then going into the bench, you have Abdu Jai and Iman Washington and Howard Fleming. Those guys were on the team. But then you have the additions of Liam McChesney, Ryan Schmidt, guys who we have no idea what they were going to look like. And those are just the guys who got minutes in this season opener. But it really looks like the team is gelling well. Mm-hmm. They're playing for each other. Like Joe said, last year's team, they don't make this comeback because those guys just weren't bought in. They might have been more talented with DJ Horn and Dusan Mihorčić and those guys. But I just don't think they were the guys, but I don't think they were bought in like this team is.
And it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, Liam McChesney, he didn't put up any points, but he put up about 17 minutes of game action. He's an interesting prospect. He was one of the best prospects coming out.
And he had 4 blocks, too. The guy was insane.
Yeah, he was good on defense. He's a tall guy. He can spread the floor, too. He can shoot the three. But he used to be one of the top prospects coming out of Canada, went to Utah State, didn't really play. Then the season got cut short. He opted out due to COVID and everything. So he's had a new opportunity here. Same with some of the other guys. Mark Freeman, he also put up a solid game as well, putting up 11 points in his debut. But he did fall out, so maybe that's something to keep an eye on throughout the rest of the season.
And I just think you guys kind of talked about how there are little to no expectations for this team. That could, in a weird way, work out well for them. I think these are some players where they're looking to reclaim their career, reclaim some of their hype. Mark Freeman came as a transfer from Tennessee State, where he was one of the top players there. He's probably looking to prove that he could hang with some bigger competition, play in the Valley. Antonio Reeves is another player where he had a lot of hype coming in as a freshman. Then it kind of felt like people wrote him off as a bust. Well, now he grew a little bit, has filled out his frame, and was able to really work on his game in the summer. Declared for the NBA draft, obviously he didn't go through with that, but was still able to work with some of those caliber players. And I think this is kind of a chance for him to prove that maybe he wasn't, you know, the second fiddle to DJ Horn, that he is just as worthy of that hype he had coming in as a freshman.
And that's interesting to talk about because he was preparing like he was about to go to the NBA or go to the pro somewhere. Yeah. So that just doing that off-season grind, off-season preparedness and doing all that, maybe that elevates his game. I mean, he only shot 30% last year from the three-point line, and I mean, there's just so much more room to grow, too, I think, still for Antonio Reeves.
And I think the issue with Reeves was never the talent, because he would show some flashes of him being able to maybe take over a game at times, but then you didn't see that on a night-to-night basis. Mm-hmm. That was consistency with him. So if he could figure that out, now with the bigger size, with the being stronger, he could really be a player that could take things over.
And I think the biggest thing that is working in Antonio Reeves' in his favor this season is the fact that he is going to be getting the ball. He's going to be the one who's going to run this offense. Yeah. Because last year, you have to think about it, like you had a couple big guys, and you had DJ Horn and Dedrick Boyd, who Dan Mueller loved to use off the bench.
Guys, though.
And exactly, they were ball first guys.
So you kind of got lost in the shuffle because of that.
You really didn't get to see what Reeves could do as a ball dominant guard. But now that he's gotten that opportunity, you've seen that he has the potential to be this really important fixture for ISU basketball.
And the only one thing I want to look at is the only 9 assists and the total game for the whole team. But another great thing is only 9 turnovers throughout the whole game. And that's in your first game with really – that's really important. Like, in your first game, sometimes you usually see a lot of sloppiness from teams, especially with this team that has a bunch of new guys in it. Yeah. But they just seem bought in. Like, I mean, obviously they probably won't compete for the MVC, but, I mean, this team could finish in a spot that's not 10th place.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they deserve something a little more. And especially Antonio Reeves, he was robbed of not getting a all-MVC team, I mean, for one of the three. But I feel like at the end of the year it might happen, especially with a couple of injuries happening, like Tyree Key, Indiana State. And it's going to be an interesting season. You and I already lost, and they're like pretty much an easy win, but it was not, obviously, because they lost to a fairly unknown team. I can't remember their name.
And looking ahead on the season, there are a couple prove-it matches. Murray State is coming up. That'll be a big game. And then obviously a couple huge ones on the schedule. Ball State and then at Wisconsin, December 29th.
Yeah. Wisconsin, though, they're not such a Wisconsin team as they've been in.
It's still a University of Wisconsin basketball.
It's like, not like you're having these like 6-year guys though. Wisconsin's a different team.
But I still think that that's a huge game, and it's not one that I'm expecting the Birds to win. But if they can be competitive, and then they turn around January 2nd, they start the Valley season. I am excited for this team. I'm bought in.
All right.
And they'll be in action against Eastern Michigan tomorrow, so maybe depending on how that goes, we could have completely different opinions on the squad this time next week. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mary Crompton's going to join the show, so stick around for that. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Welcome back to The Red Zone. Leo Stodher, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kenny now joined by Mary Crompton of the ISU women's basketball team. Mary's returning to the show as now she's the MVC Most Improved Player of the Year. So let's talk about that to start things off. Mary, what went right for you last season, and where do you think you improved the most in your game?
Yeah, I think, that season was coming off of the whole quarantine process with COVID. So I think I just really took advantage of all that time off and time away from the team to really focus on my own game and try and develop my weaknesses as much as possible. So, I think I just really worked on feeling comfortable shooting harder shots, and also feeling more comfortable scoring, in different ways outside of three point shot.
And speaking of improvement, we were wondering if you had any tips, because we actually have a rec basketball team.
We need help.
we're dreadful. We're 1-2-1. We don't move the ball well. We don't shoot from beyond the arc well. We don't shoot twos well. So if there's any advice that you have, please, because we're dreadful.
Yeah, we need some advice with shooting.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. You got to move the ball more. We talk about it as a team a lot, but the more you move the ball, then you'll be surprised, but shooting percentages go up a lot, more sides of the floor that you move the ball. So I think, I don't know if we have too many star players on the team or what, but
no,
I think
no,
we
got, like,
we've got one guy. We've got one guy who's crazy, and then everybody else is not
crazy. So you were talking, though, about the shooting percentages and going up, and last year you were third in the country in shooting percentage. Is that something you like to keep an eye on? Is that something that kind of motivates you to be a better player and better player for your team?
I mean, it wasn't something I was aware of until it happened.
Okay.
But I think just in general, going into every season, I try and hit that 45% or up mark. And then that just kind of took me where it did last year. But I don't know. We'll see if I start to challenge the shots that I take a little bit in games and shoot some harder shots, which is what my coaches want me to do. We'll see if the shooting percentages can stay up that high. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's more of just a personal goal. And then it's interesting to see how that lands, how that puts me against everyone else.
And in terms of taking those more challenging shots, is that something you really think about when it's happening? Do you feel more confident in taking those difficult shots than maybe you were last season or the one before that? Or is it just kind of when you get in that rhythm of the game, you're confident that you can just make it from anywhere?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely something that I've worked on, because I mean, our practice guys and our managers are great. Like, if I'm doing a shooting workout, I'll have someone rebounding, someone passing, and then someone like contesting it to the point where like I can hardly see the hoop over their hand. And just like practicing those types of things over and over again has made me feel confident shooting them in games, because, you know, I know how much I can push a closeout before it's going to get blocked and different things like that. So I think it's something that I definitely practice, and I kind of know based off how the game's going, whether that's something that I should shoot or not, depending on the feel of the game.
And talking about getting prepared for the season, you guys have a super tough non-conference schedule this year going ahead, Purdue, Wisconsin, a couple notable names. How much does this non-conference schedule prepare you for when you get into Valley play and the games that really matter?
Yeah, I think it's going to be critical. And, you know, it's just looking back on last year, it's just so much different. We had 3 non-conference games last year. I don't think that we are necessarily prepared once conference play started, because we hadn't been tested yet. And this year, I know that we're going to learn from all of the different tests. I mean, we're already learning from our first game of the season this year. So I think that the team's really excited to be playing such a hard schedule. And we know that doing that's only going to make us better for conference play and set us up for more success during conference and also postseason.
And you also got to see a couple teams that you normally don't see on a yearly basis when you guys went to the WNIT last year. What was that experience like for you and the team?
Yeah, I think it was just really special. We hadn't played in the WNIT as a program in a really long time. So I think that it meant a lot that we were, you know, on the right path, and each year we're getting better and better. And I think it was just a good experience for everyone to play someone outside of our normal schedule and just kind of take in that moment, because it was special for our program.
And after the WNIT, you guys kind of went into finally a normal type of off season. What type of stuff did you improve on besides outside of shooting? Because you're obviously one of the best shooters in the country. What other part of your game did you want to try to elevate?
Thank you. Well, yeah, I mean, this off season actually wasn't how I had anticipated it. I spent almost the entire time rehabbing a stress fracture.
Okay.
So I didn't get to work on my game as much as I would have liked to, but I think that kind of just shifted my focus to being more physically ready to play. I worked on my strength a lot because that was something that I could do when I was injured. And then I think just continuing to be able to find different ways to score will always just be something that I work on for the rest of my career.
When did that rehab process kind of like wrap up, and when did it kind of start?
Oh yeah. So it started at the end of June, beginning of July. I was completely shut down.
Yeah.
And then I really started getting back into team practices, I want to say 3 or 4 weeks ago. Okay. So I haven't been back for very long at all.
I'm sure they're happy to have you back though.
Yeah, I don't know. I know I'm really happy to be back.
Yeah.
I missed playing a lot, and I hadn't gotten to play with, I mean, we have a lot of new people this year. So I was really looking forward to being back and being able to play with some of the freshmen, and then Jada, the transfer. So it's been a lot of fun to be back. I'm really happy.
Yeah.
And when you're coming off an injury like that and you have to join the team late, do you feel like there's a little extra legwork that you have to do to get acclimated to where the rest of the team is at?
Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm pretty lucky because I'm not a newcomer. I know our offense. I know exactly what we're trying to do. So I just made sure I took as many mental reps as possible when I was out, so that from that standpoint, it was a really easy transition. There's not much that I needed to like learn once I came back, because I've been here so long. I know it at this point, but I think just in general, there's just like the extra motivation to get my legs back under me and make sure that I'm like physically ready to go. So just been trying to make sure I've been doing as much lower body lifting, cardio on the bike, anything extra that I can do so that I'm more physically ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as this year's team goes, you're bringing back most of the contributors from last year's squad and then some talented newcomers. Who's someone that we didn't get to see last year that really impressed you in practice?
Yeah, I mean, you saw her some last year, but I would say Maya Wong. She's been incredible over the summer, and I think that she's really improved her game and gotten a lot of confidence playing within our system. So like I said, you saw her some last year, but I think you're going to see a lot more of her this year. And I think people are going to be really impressed.
And what freshmen coming in this year do you think that are going to get a bit more playing time compared to other freshmen that are coming in starting off their careers? You don't really quite see a lot of freshmen get playing time sometimes. So is there anyone that you might be seeing out there a bunch?
Yeah. I think that Kenzie Bowers has done a great job in this preseason. And I think that you're going to get to see her play a good amount, as you saw in the first game this year already. But she's been working hard. She's solid and she's reliable. So I think you're going to be seeing a lot of her. And then I think also just from a post standpoint, we got into foul trouble the first game of the year, and you saw Lexi Bowles step up and get some playing time. So I think you might be seeing some of her too.
And looking ahead, I know the season is still very young, but looking ahead, what are some aspirations that the team has as far as how you want to do in the Valley regular season wise, tournament? What are the goals for this season?
Yeah. Just as a team, you know, we want to make the NCAA championships. So we as a team want to win our conference, and we all believe in each other. And we know that we're a long ways from that right now, but just trying to keep grinding every single day, getting better every day at practice, can put us in a good position to compete for a Valley championship.
And then from a personal standpoint, what are you hoping to accomplish? Because now you've had to take on more of an expanded role as an upperclassman. You're someone that I'd assume most of the new people look up to. So what are you trying to accomplish for yourself?
Yeah, I think just continuing to try and I've had a lot of experience here. So just continue to try and share what I've learned throughout my years here with all the newcomers. And then just continuing to shoot the ball well, and just be a reliable person for our team.
So last question to wrap things up. We're calling you like a graduate junior because there's so much different going on with all this COVID things and everything. So you're most likely have one more year left after this, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. All right. And then after that, who knows too as well, cause you'll have that extra COVID year. So it's
yeah.
Is that something that you're thinking about and like after school and like, cause you're also doing a lot with school wise as well. You're in a scholar team and everything. So do you think you'll maybe take that extra year and maybe go right out to professional?
Yeah. I mean, that would be my sixth year here. So I'm not exactly sure about that, but
I know.
I don't think I've ruled everything out, completely, but in general, I want to go to medical school once I'm done with this, and I'm pretty set up to do that after next season. So that's probably what the plan is right now.
Who knows?
The ISU's first student athlete pursuing their doctorate.
That would be a crazy story.
I mean, I wish that could be allowed. I don't know. I have looked into that, but I don't think that's possible.
there's still people like who have like 7 years in college. So I mean, who knows? You could go. Yeah. You could go forever.
That's true. I'd be nearly 30 by the time I left here.
We'd like to thank Mary for taking the time to join us for that interview. And when we come back, Blake Borgard is going to join the show to talk about something you probably haven't heard about. That's coming up next on The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you are listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Red Zone on WZND. We've also sought her Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and now Blake Borgard, one of our new team members, comes to the show. And Blake, before we get you started here, I just wanted to say this is a topic that when you told me about it, I didn't know anything about, and now I've kind of gone
surprised me, honestly.
A little rabbit hole about this topic, and it's really interesting. And that's what I like when we bring the show, when we have people come on with topics that we don't normally discuss or wouldn't think about. So why don't you tell the audience what it is you want to bring to the show tonight?
Absolutely. Well, Leo, first of all, thank you for having me tonight. I'm very happy to be here. So after 37 years, the NBA ended its contract with Spalding Balls and moved over to Wilson Balls. Refrain from chuckling, boys.
So he's got jokes.
He has some jokes. Blake actually just came on to do a 15-minute stand-up. So we're just going to lay loud. So basically, right now, the NBA shooting percentage from the field is at 44.6%, which is the lowest in the last four seasons. And from three, they're even worse at 34.2%, which is the lowest in five seasons. Paul George actually came out about this and spoke in an interview about how he thought it was because it's a new grip on the ball. It's just a new feeling for everything, basically.
It's just weird, like, to think about, like, how the NBA, you almost want these people to be able to, like, keep shooting the three-pointer. Yeah. And I mean, like, why would you change up the ball? I get maybe it was, like, the sponsorship and everything, but wouldn't you try to keep it the same thing? Because you want offense, and offense brings in fans. So it's interesting to see this. And I mean, like, lowest in 15 years, especially with how much shooting has been, like, keep improving every year. Like, 15 years ago, like, no one was really shooting the three like it is now.
And one of the things Leo said when we were talking about this topic earlier was that it could be because of the increased amount of shots and low percentage shots that the league is prioritizing. Because, I mean, it took the league 30 years to figure this out, but 3 points is more than two. So if you shoot more three-pointers, if you can make even slightly less than you do two-pointers, you're going to win the game. So that could be because a lot more of these teams are leaning into those analytics. That could also be a driving factor. So it's just a really interesting thing to think about.
And the thing I think about, too, is the way how baseball tampers with the ball a lot. Some years that they want more home runs. Other years, like this year, they get rid of that, and so the ball's not juicy, and it's not. But I don't get the NBA. You think, like Joe just said, offense is good. People with the Golden State Warriors and everything, the three-pointer has become so embraced that you think they'd want to find a way to keep that going. And so I get it that it's a contract thing that, you know, Wilson probably offered more money and all that. But couldn't you figure out a way to make, like, the same exact ball, but just with a different label on it? That's what I don't get.
Definitely. And I also think that, like, a big part of this, too, that's probably playing into it that not a lot of players are talking about, is that the NBA is moving in more of a defensive direction. Obviously, in the offseason, they changed the rules to where it's non-basketball moves. Those are no longer given to the fouls for the players. So, like, James Harden, for example, he's averaging something like 14 points this season.
Yeah.
He's not getting the line because he's not getting these calls. And, like, even including that, like, people, especially right now, it's earlier on the season, like, people are taking up those shots still from the three-point line, maybe expecting a foul. And I think overall, it's just getting used to that. And then now having this new ball and everything, they tried it out in 2006 and everything. They almost tried to change up the type of ball, and they tried it in the offseason. The players hated it. And I wonder if, like, they'll try to change things back again, or they're just going to keep getting used to it.
Yeah, I don't know, because it's an issue that when I was doing some research about this, I found out it comes up with the Olympics every 4 years because FIBA uses a different ball. It's a different texture, and the NBA players at the beginning have trouble with it in a lot of those exhibitions, but then by the end of, you know, the 2 weeks they're playing, they're fine with it, and USA, you know, runs away with the gold every year. So I wonder if this is going to be one of those things where the players by December are used to it, or if this trend continues, and then see how the NBA tries to change that if they do something in mid-season. Again, I keep referring back to baseball, but the way how baseball handed down the sticky stuff ban mid-season, would the NBA come in and interject, do something like this if this continues?
But I feel like for baseball, though, they don't, like, change the grip of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, I guess they have, like, the spider tack thing and everything. And it's just,
I guess what I'm getting at is more of how baseball came in with a radical policy change mid-season.
Mm-hmm.
Would the NBA do that? That's what I don't know.
And I think that, like, one of the things that it's important to think about is, like, for normies like us, we're sitting here wondering, like, oh, I wonder why this is such a big deal, right? Like, it's just the grip on the ball. But when you spend, like, countless hours,
your whole day, your whole life
practicing, and then you get so accustomed to this one ball, like, this one way of doing it, I think that,
and then they change that variable on you.
Yeah, and I think that changed a lot. And so it makes sense when you go to the Olympics or even collegiate to the pros, that's a different ball. So you have college guys who have to adjust to the NBA ball. So it is really, really interesting, just the way that these guys are struggling shooting the ball. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, as we were talking about earlier off the air, I was telling you guys about Ja'Marr Chase, how the top five pick for the Bengals, he's obviously a standout now for them. He's turning into a budding star, frankly. He had some trouble this preseason. Everybody was calling him a bust because he was having all those drops in preseason. He couldn't catch the ball. And then he talked about it to the media and he said, hey, it's a different ball. I have to just get accustomed to it. So I think it's really interesting how these players across multiple sports coming up from collegiate level or just like anything like that, just changing. And the ball being different really affects like that high end progression and that high end production that they put up.
And like the size of it too, I believe, is just a little bigger in the NFL. And thing about Ja'Marr Chase too, didn't he also get contacts finally as well?
Yeah, that's true too.
I can finally see the ball and everything. But it's a whole dynamic of like, because as us, like we play a sport, basketball, football, or baseball, or we're used to that ball. We're like, oh, we don't notice this at all. Yeah. I mean, there's different types, there's different brands and everything. So like we pick up a ball that's different to another ball, but we think they're pretty similar. Like they're the same thing. But to an NBA player, to an NFL player, when you're picking up something that you use every single day, you will definitely notice a difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the way you used to hear Larry Bird talk about, where he knew exactly how the ball bounced at certain parts of the old Boston Garden, how you could play that to your advantage. You know these players are like that too, because they spend their entire lives being practicing how to shoot this specific thing. And so you throw off that variable and you never know what's going to happen with it. It's the way, again, another baseball analogy, but the way these guys couldn't throw the ball after the spider tech was removed. Yeah. It's just interesting that this happens and that, you know, maybe the players didn't have as much time to practice with it or as much run up to it to get used to it.
So as the NBA season progresses, Leo, you brought up a couple hypothetical situations. Do you think that, because obviously now that Wilson has the contract, right, they will be producing the balls for the NBA for the time being. Do you think that they will try to alter it at all? Do you think that the NBA will try to introduce something new, or do you think the league will just kind of bank on the players getting used to it, like Leo said, around December?
I think that they're just going to have to get used to it. Obviously, in the Olympics, as we were talking about earlier, you have to get used to the FIBA ball. Like it's just like the way the game is going to have to be played for the next however many years until they eventually probably go back to Spalding when Spalding offers them a new contract.
Yeah. I think, you know, one example I thought of that was how the NBA wasn't afraid to change things up. Remember when they switched from Adidas to Nike uniforms and guys' jerseys were ripping on the court the first day and they had to, you know, mid-season, basically kind of revamp the material they used for the jerseys. So maybe if this trend continues, they could do it. But it's one of those things where I don't think it is necessarily as dangerous. It's just we're going to see how players evolve to it. Maybe do they try taking different types of shots or putting a different spin on the ball? I think these players, they made it to the NBA for a reason. They're the best players in the world. They'll figure out a way to improve it, but they just need time to figure it out.
And
first,
I think you touched on something that it kind of culminates everything we've talked about, is the fact that the sponsorships and the money coming into the league for jerseys, apparel, balls, shoes, everything like that, that does have an impact on the players when you change something like that. And it's just an interesting thing that you don't usually think about, is how this money and impacts the players.
One thing, like, though, I want to kind of talk about is that people in the MLB, like, they noticed it right away, and like it was all over like national media coverage and everything. And before this, I didn't really know much. I mean, I remember over the summer they said they were changing and everything, but besides a couple of players, like in just post game conferences, maybe just talking about it, it hasn't really been that much of a deal as it was compared to the MLB and everything. And I wonder if that's like just because the players, I mean, don't notice it. Like, are they blaming it on the ball that these 3-point percentage shooters are just going way below? So it's just interesting to see that maybe over time, will players start to talk about it? Maybe they'll start to blame the ball for the 3-point percentage.
And it's also worth noting that Wilson will also supply the balls for the G League and the WNBA. So I wonder if there's that same kind of outrage there, because I was kind of looking for it and I didn't find too much about it.
Yeah, I don't. Well, the WNBA season just ended, so that won't. That won't go into effect until this spring, their season comes back into play. But that's another ball. The women's ball is different, so it'll be interesting to see how those leagues are affected as well.
Mm-hmm. Something I will say though is that the free throw percentage is actually higher than the last 3 seasons.
Really?
So it's clearly something about the act of like playing basketball and moving around with this new ball that they just don't actively have the grip on it yet. You know, it's not actually the players' fault. You know, they just haven't had enough fine tuning yet with training camp and preseason and all that stuff to where they're used to the ball. And I think as the season progresses and goes on, the this like weird trend that's going on. It's going to flatten out with the curve, and it's going to look a lot more more natural as the season progresses.
Yeah, and that's another thing that has to do with the rule changes as well, because of the fact that they're not calling as many of those fouls at the three-point line, and you have to make a basketball move or whatever, then you have less guys go to the line, and usually when you have less of the shots, the percentage will go up. So there's like the two big extenuating circumstances in why the NBA has been different this season. It's the rule changes that benefit defensive players, and it's the change of the ball, and they are both impacting the other, which I just think is it's cool to notice like the minute details of the sport that are affecting the way the game is played.
And another ball that's affecting the game right now is Lonzo Ball. Because Lonzo Ball last night had the best game of his career in the Chicago Bulls uniform. And just what a great game the Bulls had last night, defeating the Mavericks. Five players are over 16 points. But Lonzo Ball, man, finally, he was shooting the lights out, too. I mean, talk about shooting percentages. His shooting percentage went all the way up over the past couple of seasons just because of his new form and everything, too. So, I mean, it's awesome to see that Lonzo Ball's putting up shots here in Chicago and putting up over 20 points.
And kind of to tie it into the segue we just made, Lonzo Ball's another player. When he came to the NBA, his shot needed adjusting, and he needed to change the way he did everything. So, but he's figured out a way to do that. So I think, to put a bow on the first conversation, I think NBA players will figure out a way to do it because they're professionals. They're paid to do it. Their jobs depend on it. So as Lonzo Ball is a prime example of players, if they put in that work to fix something in their game, they can do it.
Mm-hmm. And are we going back to the Bulls really quick?
Real quick, wrap up a couple minutes with the Bulls. Yeah.
Okay, cool, because I had some Bulls. So DeMar DeRozan this season, guys.
Oh, my.
Besides last night, but yes.
Everybody gets an off day. True. But DeMar DeRozan, I've seen people start to talk about this, and like when this acquisition happened over the summer, I remember Bleacher Report came out with an article. They said top 10 worst free agent signings.
He's number one.
He was number one. And now he truly looks like a top five player in the NBA. Like, the way that he's played through the first 10 games, it's incredible. We haven't seen this production out of him since his prime days in Toronto.
He's aged like a fine wine. What can I say?
Exactly.
And, like, the beautiful thing about the Bulls right now is, as we were talking about, five players with 16. It's not just Zach LaVine getting it done. It's not just Vooch getting it done. It's everybody out there. Caruso's looked incredible. Io's looked like the steal in the second round. Not to mention, we're going to get Kobe White back, too. We haven't seen that team with Kobe White yet. He could even be a Sixth Man of the Year candidate later on.
The one thing worries me is still that depth at the big man spot. I mean, especially now with Vucevic being out for a couple of games because of COVID protocols and everything. But it's just an interesting team because you don't have a top five, maybe a top 10 player, like a superstar type of player. But you have all these guys, three of them that have been on an all-star team and a couple others that maybe possibly can be on an all-star team. And it's just you don't need one guy to score 30 points a night. Even Zach LaVine, you're going to have production from Lonzo Ball out of nowhere that's going to be putting up 20 points a game every now and then. And maybe LaVine will go down. So you don't have the superstar player, but it's just a team full of stars, and I think that's what's going to make this team good and a possible chance to be a big threat in the East.
Yeah, and I think that's how you kind of have to be constructed in the modern NBA is you just have to be able to get to the postseason, and it doesn't really matter how you do that. If you have just players that could pick up when other players are down, I think that's what we've seen with this team. If DeRozan has an off night, LaVine goes off, or Caruso, or somebody else, I think that depth is what is really going to carry them because you know, maybe they lack that true superstar, but they have guys that could pick up when their numbers call.
They're very reminiscent of the 2004 Pistons. Yeah. A group of guys that just go at it.
There was nobody
on that team who really was the superstar. Like you could argue, like Chauncey Billups, but he wasn't like a top five player in the league.
No, he wasn't.
But they just had all these guys who were very good, and they all played together. And that's really what the Bulls have seemed to do this season. And very exciting time to be a Bulls fan.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
It's going to be a great season.
Yeah, definitely.
Caruso, it's just been so fun to watch. He's just a whatever it takes guy. Right, and he just does everything. I would assume from Chicago and everything, just every time he's on the court, the crowd just love it. Yeah. He's a hometown guy, grew up literally in the backyard, and it's just an awesome experience for him. The fans finally have that hometown guy. He's obviously not a D Rose, not a Derrick Rose guy, but it's always fun to have a hometown guy on your squad.
And I think just the thing with Sumo that makes it so cool too is that he played college in Illinois too.
Yeah.
And then comes here. But this was a very productive conversation. Talked about a lot of different things with basketball, some stuff that I probably didn't know about before the show. But when we come back, we're going to keep things going. We're going to transition from the hardwood to the gridiron. We're going to play the pick six. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. sounder means it's time to play the Pick 6, our weekly NFL Pick'em segment. Yep. Joey, why don't you let the audience know what the standings are and how we play this game here.
So how we play this game every week, Leo, is we pick 6 NFL games. We pick the winners, or at least we try to. And
you try to.
And watch it. Watch it over there, guy. So we pick the games every week, and then we keep a score. And then at the end of the semester, the winner gets bragging rights for all of eternity. The way the standings are shaping up, our very own Joe Kennedy pulls ahead with a 5-1 week, takes sole possession of first place with a 34-20 record. The guest spot, represented by Blake tonight, that's going to be 33-21. You're only one game back.
A lot of pressure on me.
A lot of pressure. And then our honorable sports director, Leo Stodher, with a 32-22 record, 4-2 last week. He's two games back from the lead. RFAC lead advisor Steve Cease, 30-24, 5-1 last week. Great week for Steve. He's still four games back, so he's got a little catching up to do. And then I think that's everybody.
Joey Dwyer in fifth place, exactly at 500, 27-27, 2-4 week last week. That maybe, just maybe, took him out of contention for that first place spot.
I'm mathematically
seven games back.
I'm mathematically in it.
I'd say there's reason analytics for aren't because with you. We don't do math, so we won't really get into that. But let's get into these games here. We'll start with the Thursday night game. We've got the Baltimore Ravens at the Miami Dolphins coming up in just a little bit here. I'm going to start things off with the Ravens here. I'm not totally sold on them, but I think they could get it done against a flawed Miami team.
I think it's going to be an interesting game. I think the Dolphins are going to be able to hang around in this game too, especially. So it should be a fun one to watch. But however, Lamar Jackson, I think he does a good job against the blitz in certain situations and everything. I'm going to have to go with the Ravens in this one, though.
And, you know, the last time the Ravens played the Dolphins, the Ravens actually stomped them at home 59-10. Yeah. Lamar coming destroyed home to Florida. That's where he's from. I'm taking the Ravens, no question.
I'm also going to go with the Ravens. I like Blake's reasoning. And also, I just am not a Tua believer after this season.
He's done good, though, this year. Yeah! When healthy.
But I'm still going Ravens.
There is one guy who took the Dolphins, and that is would Steve
be
Cease.
That would be faculty advisor Steve Cease. So he's playing the strat here. Moving to our next game, it's a Sunday noon game, the New Orleans Saints at the Tennessee Titans. These are a pair of teams that are really searching for their identities. The Saints are trying to figure out what to do about their quarterback situation. The Titans need a running back. I think the Titans are a more complete team so far, so I'm going to go with them. Just not really a believer in Trevor Siemian at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Siemian's actually looked kind of decent in recent games, but the Saints, it's going to be interesting. Alvin Kamara hasn't practiced the past 2 days, and Tennessee run defense is actually pretty solid. And, I mean, at the moment, the Titans are without Derrick Henry for the rest of the season, so that's obviously going to be not good for their team, but it's also going to have Ryan Tannehill be able to pass the ball down the field to Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. And it all really depends on Kamara. Maybe he'll play. Maybe I would take the Saints, but I'm going to go with the Titans in this one.
I think I'm going to have to go with the Titans, too, after last week against the Rams. That was a statement win for them. Adrian Peterson looked like he could step into that Derrick Henry role and at least take up some of the production. And not to mention, the Saints just lost to the Falcons last week. I'm sorry. I can't take them against the Titans, who just beat the Rams.
Matt Ryan is a Saint killer.
Yeah. You mentioned Adrian Peterson. Also, Jeremy McNichols looking really good in that Titans backfield in place of Derrick Henry. And if Jameis Winston was going to be quarterback in the Saints, this would be a completely different story. I think that the Saints would be a great underdog here. Yeah. However,
and Kamara,
like Joe said, Trevor Siemian not getting it done. We're going with the Titans. That's a clean sweep. Right.
And Steve Cease goes with the Titans to officially make it the clean sweep here. And in the next game, it's a Sunday 3:05 game, the Minnesota Vikings at the LA Chargers. These are a couple of teams that have just been weird this year. They win some games they're not supposed to win, then lose games they should win. I like the Chargers here. I still believe in what they got going. Big believer in Justin Herbert, so I'm rolling with them.
Yeah, former Redbird Mike Zimmer, head coach. He's without a lot on defense. Daniel Hunter, Patrick Patterson are out in this one. And then also five of the starters on the Vikings played around 96-98 snaps last week. So they're gonna be down and maybe not feel as good on their legs as well. And Justin Herbert might have a good game here on this one. I still think the Vikings can pull something out, keep it close, because they've done that in pretty much every game. But I'm going to go with the Chargers in this. My good friend, Justin Herbert.
And as a fantasy manager of both Justin Herbert and Keenan Allen, I'm also going to be going with the Chargers. Chargers here. Look, okay. Last week after the Vikings lost to the Ravens like that, that was an absolute heartbreaker. I think that was the last gasp for that team, and I think it's really going to fall off a cliff here. So Chargers 100%.
No, yeah, I think last week put Mike Zimmer on the hot seat, and I think this week might just be the beginning of the end of his reign in Minnesota. I'm going with the Chargers.
Steve Cease also goes with the Chargers, so everybody's really stacked against the Vikings here. These next few games might be where it gets a little more divisive. This one is going to be a weird one because of a few different variables. There are some quarterbacks with some controversy around both of them. It's the Seattle Seahawks at the Green Bay Packers, Sunday at 3:25. Potentially Russell Wilson versus Aaron Rodgers. I feel like that's still a little bit up in the air right now. I'm really torn on this one. I think, because I'm trying to make this decision without knowing the quarterbacks, I think the Packers are the better team, even with Jordan Love versus a Geno Smith Seahawks team. So given if Rodgers plays, I think this is going to be a Packers win.
Yeah, I mean, if Rodgers plays, which I think he probably will, I mean, everything going on, it's almost like Wilson coming back after a long week of time is like the second story
right.
of the weekend
really
in this game. No one's talking about that. But, I mean, this is Russell Wilson's team that just missed out on OBJ, too. I mean, he went to the Rams and everything. But if Rodgers is there, him and his coach are 19-3 at home, so I'm going to have to keep it with the Green Bay Packers, unfortunately.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I think Rodgers is just too good against that Seahawks secondary. I think they're bottom 30 in the league against the pass, and Rodgers coming off of a week where he was just sick and he had so much time to game plan for this, I think he's ready for it. So I'm going to go with the Packers.
Leo sees the look on my face. He knows what I'm about to do.
You know, I like it, though. I can
Leo's
see the
looking
Seahawks.
At me in disbelief.
Who knows? You're mathematically eliminated. It's just
and it's Thursday right now, so maybe Rodgers won't be playing. Like, that's
all
the thing.
Say,
you got to take
Russell Wilson.
Joey.
Boots. I don't even have to finish it. Leo knows.
We're going to go
ground in Lambeau.
Boots on the ground in Lambeau.
It's a reckoning.
We're going with the Seahawks.
Let's go. I like it. You never know what could happen in the next couple of days, too, so...
I wasn't expecting the nearly sweep, but here we are anyway. We have for our next one, it's the Sunday night game, Chiefs at Raiders. The Chiefs are another one of these weird teams where they haven't been playing up to their potential. Last week's game against the Packers was just ugly. I just think with the Raiders, with everything they have going on, that organization is a mess going on at the moment. I think the Chiefs will be able to overcome that just because they're a lot more sound right now.
Yeah, but also, like, when are we going to stop saying the Chiefs aren't going to, like...
I don't know.
When are we going to be,
I'm
like...
saying it again.
Every week, we're like, oh, okay, this offense is going to finally break out. They're going to get out of this slump. Like, when is enough? But, I mean, this Raiders team, as Leah was saying, it's just... they're in shambles. And I'm going to have to go... with the Chiefs, though, still.
Okay.
I just wanted to
okay.
switch it up right there. But no, I'm going to have to keep going with the Chiefs just because I do have Patrick Mahomes also on my fantasy team, so I'm going to be rooting for him. It's a big week.
Bit of a surprise for you guys, maybe. I'm taking the Raiders 100%. Oh. Raiders at home. These teams in the AFC West, they always play each other really hard. And as a matter of fact, the Raiders actually beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead last year. They beat them 40-32. I love the Raiders in this one. Derek Carr is a Chief killer.
Oh, should've done it.
And here's the thing. I like the Raiders, too. I think this Raiders defense is super underrated. I think that with the struggles that Patrick Mahomes has had, the lack of confidence he has in that offense right now, I just think this is a time where the Raiders can get it done because I don't think they're a slouch of a team by any means. So I think it's going to be a good game. It's going to be close, but I'm taking the Raiders.
Guys, should I be scared if Joey's thinking the same as
yes,
me?
You should. Yeah,
yes,
you should.
Yes, you should.
Blake's new here, but he gets the help. Steve Cease also going with the Chiefs here. So it's everybody against Blake and Joey. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay.
For the last one, the Monday night game, this could be another interesting one. It's the LA Rams at the San Francisco 49ers. It's a California matchup. I'm going with the Rams here. They had that loss last week, but I think they're going to bounce back against a team in the 49ers that I said were frauds 2 weeks ago. Maybe not complete frauds, but I like the Rams here.
You can't call them frauds yet. You got George Kittle coming back. Mike Shanahan has a 4-game winning streak against the Rams. You're playing at home where the defense is coming back and a good performance in the past couple weeks. Brandon Ayuk as well as picking up his game where everyone expected him to. So I'm going with the San Francisco 49ers in this one.
Give me the Odell Beckham Jr. led Rams to storm into Levi Stadium and break that 4-game winning streak.
All right. I don't know. Is he going to play, you think?
I don't care. He's on the team.
Von Miller, too, is back now there as well.
All I got to say is Odell Beckham Jr. He proved it in Cleveland. Ultimate locker room cancer. I can't pick a team that Odell Beckham Jr. is on. I'm going with Joe, the 49ers. Let's roll.
Let's go, baby.
Steve Cease is going with the Rams here. So that's the divisive game we were finally hoping to get. That's all the time we have on this week's Red Zone. We'd like to thank Mary Crompton for coming on the show. Really appreciate Blake Borgart coming on and enlightening us on a topic we didn't really know. Hopefully for the first of what was many Red Zone appearances. And it was just a solid show, guys. We were able to recap the ISU football win, the ISU basketball win. Crompton came on the show. And if you missed any part of it, you can catch it on podcast form on WZND.com. We'll have that uploaded in just a little bit. And if you we don't have any broadcasts coming up this weekend, but there are a lot of Illinois State sports in action. So
great stuff coming up next week, too. A lot of stuff next week.
Oh, yeah, next week. I'll tease this real quick. It'll be our senior night show, so we'll be honoring Jose Sandoval and Blake Hornstein. We thank you very much for listening, and have a great weekend, everybody. This has been The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.